Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Michael. I've asked some of my friends to join me for this month's roundtable discussion. I'd like to give them an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Hello, everyone. My name is Oren Johnson. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Fantastic.
Clear and concise.
Next to the line with us is...
Yeah, this is Ernest Montz. I'm out here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Thank you for joining us today.
All right. I'm just going to dive right into it, guys. As black men raised in the U.S., it's almost inevitable that we experience microaggressions. Sometimes we know it and sometimes we don't. I'll start off with you, Oren. Have you experienced microaggression? If you have, would you talk about that experience?
So I've definitely experienced it. So let's get everybody caught up to speed. All right. So microaggression are the everyday verbal, nonverbal, and environmental slights, snubs, and insults. Anything that kind of deals with race, that's pretty much unconsciously happening. Almost like a reflex. Somebody's going to hit you in your knee. It's going to kind of move. You know what I'm saying? But I think it's all based with that person's perspective or that person's environment.
Meaning that person, meaning who? As in
that
the person
that,
receiving and the person
both. That's
doing.
And that's the key, is that it's both. It takes somebody to know that they're being snubbed. So not only does the person who's doing the snubbing have to realize that microaggression happened, it's also vice versa. The key is where it really starts is really understanding your audience and what you know about the subject. So just here for an example, growing up in Alaska, okay, I didn't, just a little background, growing up in Alaska, that's how I know everybody who's speaking on this radio. I learned how to snowboard. It was a key thing. It was a big thing, you know? Everybody just knew how to kind of do snow sports or whatever. But then moving from Alaska and then going to Virginia and then coming back to California, I would go snowboarding and people would say, hey, you know, you're really good at snowboarding for a black dude. And I'm just like, what does that mean? Exactly. I can't just be good at snowboarding because I'm a human person, you know?
Yeah.
But really what it was is I didn't really think much of it. I was like, oh, you know, that's just kind of how it was. But what it comes down to for me, why would you just automatically say that? You know, why can't I be good at snowboarding just because I practice?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Ernest?
And this is Ernest here. Like as black dudes, like we've all been in that situation where we've walked into a store and get eyeballed just from the assumption that we might shoplift something. Like,
yeah.
Sure, we might have done dumb stuff as kids or whatever, but like that's not who we are. We're not walking into a store for just automatically thinking we're going to take some without paying for it. No, but like we get eyeballed like we are on occasion. No, that's just like a coming of age thing for black people, basically. I mean, it sucks, but.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. Also, the people who are doing it don't always know that they are. So, for the examples you just gave us, Ernest, they know that they saw this black man walk in the store and they think he's going to take something, and so they're doing that. I feel like that sort of stuff I can handle better because it's more puts you on the defensive, and defensive means that you're prepared, or that you can be prepared because you see the enemy or you see the situation. Microaggression, when it's unintentional from the person doing it, it's even harder because they, especially if you can tell, they honestly don't think that there's a problem. I think I dealt with most of that. My biggest was in the South. The racism down there was so ingrained that it's just like, so what? Like, that's what it is. And you're like, huh? Now, I have experienced that myself in Juneau, but it was a lot of coming up. Most of it I had to say me coming up in school. And both of you went to high school here. Right. And so I know for a fact that you guys experienced the things there with were the jokes that your friends made or your acquaintances/friends or gym friends that they made, but you're the only black guy in the room. And so you kind of just either laugh that off or, you know, pretend like it didn't hit. Adding that sort of stuff, for me, that feels like it's even more hurtful. At least it can be hurtful. Do you guys agree?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem unconscious.
And have you experienced anything like that, or am I way off base?
It seems intentional. It seems intentional in that case.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, this is Ernest again. One of the people that I consider like a real friend, like she basically, not basically, she actually said when we were talking about like why we get along so good, and she was like, well, you're not like an actual black guy. I'm like, what in the heck is that supposed to mean?
What does that mean?
Like, I'm
actual black guy.
Like, I love my blackness, and I live it. Like, how insulting to be that was for me. Like, that was so insulting.
And I think that, as far as, like, microaggression, you really got to pick your crowd, your venue. This is my good friend. I'm going to pull up. I'm going to find a way. I'm going to meet them where they're at, and I'm going to find a way to explain to them that you can't say something like that to myself. You know what I'm saying? You can't say that and expect me not to feel some type of way. And I feel as if you may not even understand it. You may not know you're doing it. It's unintentional. That's why I'm coming to you as a friend. I would appreciate it if you maybe think about the next time you say it. Not just for me, but just for your future. If it's somebody that you don't care about, sometimes you really got to pick your battles.
I'd like to point out there's a difference between the microaggression and the overt discrimination, which is some of the things I think you guys have touched on as well, which is obviously it's overt. So that says it right there. Mm-hmm. So I want to get an example out of you both, because like I said, I know you both personally, and I know you guys have experienced it. And I want to get this, kind of narrow this down, get this to a more acute definition so that we can really dive into it. A prime example of what I believe it is when you are every day, you say you ride the bus every day, okay? And every day you get on that bus, the bus driver, he used to be a line of five people, and you could be there first, walk up to put your money in the thing, and they won't take it, they won't stop it, they wait for everybody else go through first, and then they give it to you, and then has you do it, right? Or always passes you over for white, always lets somebody else go in front of you, whether they're white, black, or whether they're white, purple, or green. Like, they go in front of you, the black dude goes last. That sort of thing. Like, I think that those sort of examples of it, microaggression, are the most harmful.
There's been multiple times in my life where I would be with four or five white dudes. We'll be walking by, walking, and somebody will pass every single one of those white dudes, and I'll be the last one in, walking behind, and they'll come up to me and be like, hey, do you have any weed? I don't even smoke weed. I do not even smoke weed. And they will pass at least three out of the four or five white boys that were ahead of me all smoke weed. I don't touch this stuff. And they will ask me. And I'm like, come on, man. Get out of here with that. Get
out of
here.
Are we talking medicinal?
I don't think it matters.
All right, let's get back.
It don't matter. I don't look sick.
But I understand that's good. That's good.
That's really feelings.
That's happened multiple times.
Thank you. Thank you. I can't say that happened to me directly. I remember working at a shop one time, and somebody asked me if I could find them weed, but off the ship. And I was like,
man, we would be at like
high right now. You should ask
hotel rooms.
Like, because they're going out of town for football or for our college football games or whatever. like my team is playing our rival and we'd be out there and I'll just be with some of the homies that went and that stuff would happen. And I'm like, come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like the example, and I see,
Sorry, guys. No, go ahead, Arden. Go ahead, Arden, please.
Just like an example, I would always have friends that would be like, I couldn't pull that off because I'm not black. Or they would say, oh, yeah. The reason why you did that is because you're black, you know?
Yeah.
Or I'll get my favorite. My favorite is
you
talk white.
Yeah.
That's my favorite is you talk white.
Right? That is toxic. That is so toxic right there.
Yeah.
Why does my skin color speak, behave, or think?
Mm-hmm. Because toxic. It just does.
Right.
I think the biggest problem that comes with those sort of things is that it subtly implies that a different race is better because we're being compared to them in that manner. And then low-key, it tells you that, like, you know, you're not really the right type of black, meaning that the right type of black talks with a real, so there's a lot of slang. The right type of black does a lot of weed smoking. The right type of black only plays ball and knows that, like, all that stuff. It's dangerous because if it's not all bad, right? Like, it's not all bad connotations.
Yeah, I'm not saying,
then it can feel like they're not doing it.
We all do it.
But we all do it. Yeah.
The key is, I feel like recognizing that, because I mean, our thoughts, one thing, you know, but really having a filter, choosing to, instead of like recognizing your thinking, I mean, like, maybe I should educate myself a little bit and see how it makes others feel when I say these things, you know, really recognizing, I think, what it comes down to, you know, because we all do it. It's, you know, this is specifically about blacks, but it's like we all do it.
Yeah,
we all do.
Yeah, no matter the race.
It's so terrible because people associate proper grammar and talking with fucking white. It's like, what, white people?
One of the worst spellers I know. Like,
come on, man.
And I'd like to kind of pull it, to rein it in a little bit. It's not like what Warren said. We all do it.
Yeah.
Meaning, and I cannot myself say I haven't been guilty of it myself towards somebody else. Right now, we have the platform right now, and I'm
can't be guilty of it. Cannot
towards our race. No, definitely have, definitely have myself. Oh, I have
the masses.
Come on, man. Come on, man. Absolutely. but truly, it does. It's what's really I found interesting is that as you see that sort of thing happen to us and we recognize it, I mean us as a people, we recognize it, I found myself being somewhat convicted and ashamed of how I've done it to others when I started recognizing what was happening. And then being like mad about it, that righteous indignation. And then all of a sudden, like, well, wait a minute. Who are you? Like, you doing it the same thing, but because the hot seat is on this right now, you get to be mad about it. Try to use it as a tool for change in myself, right? Because if I don't want things, you know what I'm saying? The old rule, maybe it's kids. You know what I'm saying? Do one to others, right? Yeah. So if I don't want that for me, and I don't want that to pass that down to my kids, maybe I should. You know, be a little bit better about trying to check myself. And so I think in all, it can work out to be a really good thing as far as a learning tool if we allow it to. It doesn't always have to be, it doesn't have to allow it to be just one thing that just, you know, gets us fired up, you know, and man, it can be a learning tool for change if we want it to be. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and pause it right there, guys. And I'll be going to break. We'll see you back in a few minutes. Good afternoon, Juno. We are back. I am Michael, your host, and I am still with Ernest and Oren, and we are discussing microaggression. Got a little good in the microaggression conversation, and I want to kind of tee off on it a little bit more. I'm going to ask you a question here, and I want you both to kind of give me some feedback. We've touched on it a little bit, but as a black male, do you guys feel that it's your responsibility to make yourself appear less aggressive, and not only to you know, I know to women, anyway, do you worry about that? To different races, do you worry about that? For example, do you consciously make eye contact, smile, speak to make women feel less uncomfortable? And if you do, do you do that just to them or to everybody? I'll toss that up to anybody, whoever wants to jump in on that first.
So this is Oren speaking. As a black man, I try to make everybody feel comfortable, but I feel like the key is assessing the situation, meeting people where they're at. I'm not going to come into an elevator and automatically toss on the charm. She might not even be paying attention to me. It's unfair for me to assume that it's automatically hostile because I'm in close quarters or because they look different or they smell different or whatever the case may be. And for me to just assume that that's how she's going to feel, I can't do that. So I assess the situation as far as I'm a human being. I'm in close quarters with another human being. What would make me feel comfortable? Focus on my breathing and don't do anything that's going to make anybody feel uncomfortable. I feel like that has to be the approach for me in any situation because that's how it is. I have to look inward because at the end of the day, we are all these same beings. We just look different. I know that it's natural for some people to feel frightened with the unknown, whatever it may be, male, female, black, white, green, yellow. But at the end of the day, it's like you can feel when there's a threat sometimes. Really have to go from there. You cannot assume that can add fuel to the fire. That can make an unhostile situation hostile.
Okay.
With me, like, luckily and gladly, living in Las Vegas, it's a very, sorry, this is Ernest, by the way. Living in Las Vegas, it's a very, as far as cities go, it's a very opening city, open city. But there are still times out there where you get in certain situations where you absolutely have to try to come off as less aggressive. If you're with a large group of other black people, like it's happened with me when I was in college, going out to dinner late night with a bunch of friends, and you just try to be as polite as possible, and which you should always be, don't get me wrong, but you have to throw a little extra in there when you're with a large group of us, you know?
Yeah.
And
use words like preposterous.
Yeah, for real. And
fancy words. Yeah, right. Take the edge off. Yeah.
Serious stuff though. You want to be careful about how you act around certain groups of people, the words you speak. And a lot of times it's just all in our own heads. Honestly, like these people probably don't think one way or the other. They just think we're human beings. But being that we know that there's so many people out there that will think one way, that we just subconsciously just act and talk in a certain way that we don't draw attention to ourselves. So
sounds to me like you both are saying, and I agree with you both, and I know for a fact that this is just knowing you both personally, you guys are very good friends, that you guys are both 100% telling the truth about what you do. Oren is 100% that guy. All right, it's 100% that guy who was walking to an elevator and do his best to make sure everybody is comfortable. And Ernest, absolutely. He might not like it, but he knows it. It's a situation that we're in, and so I might not like it, but I'm going to play the game because it's just necessary.
So speaking of the elevator.
Speaking of the elevator, I can say what I was saying later. Go ahead.
Walk into an elevator. Well, back when people are allowed to be in elevators and crowded again.
Yeah, that's dead whatever. Now. That's dead.
Right. But like walk back into an elevator.
The yonder years of 2020.
Yeah. Face the back of the elevator when everyone else is facing outward. Watch how uncomfortable everybody gets. It's funny. That's right. Like, just face everybody as they're looking out the exit.
But back to what I was trying to say is that I myself have found doing the exact same thing as either one of you at any given time, almost like a chameleon. But I wonder if you guys do it. Is this something that at an earlier age you, because I know your mama and I know your daddy. So at an earlier age, I know what they were telling you. I remember some of the conversations your mom had with us when we used to go out. Michael Lauren. Right? Okay, so do you think that maybe it's at a younger age you did it and it just evolved into you being comfortable and it started that way and you just kind of changed it for yourself? Or is this something that has always been there? What do you think?
I would say that I am a product of my environment, okay. 100%. Yeah. My parents are all from the South. My mother and father are all from Alabama. Their fam's from Alabama. Everybody is from Alabama. And if you're not familiar with, you know, geography, Alabama's in the South. My mom used to tell me, listen, look straight ahead. These people will jump in your car. They will hit you in the head. They will take your clothes and your jewelry.
Okay.
People, be polite. Follow the rules. I'm just like, okay. But I mean, at the end of the day, I get you were saying, as a Black people, we've gone through some turmoil, to say the least. I felt like it was her way of kind of the door in the face technique, yeah. You know, describing things to the extreme, but knowing that it's going to be a dumbed down version. But don't forget that that happens. Yeah. People will be involved in a situation like that. So I'm going to tell you the worst case scenario. I'm going to continue to tell you the worst case scenario. And you just put your best foot forward. Do with it as you may. It's all about balance. Okay. Yeah. I want to let you know that this what can happen. And I'm going to need you to be a big boy. Remember what I taught you. And please assess. Just assess.
Ernest, sounded like I'm hearing you wanting to jump in there.
Oh, no. Like, absolutely. Just assess the situation. And like Oren, my parents are both from the South. And but they're from Little Rock, Arkansas. So you just got to be aware of your surroundings. Absolutely. Assess the situation, like Oren said.
And you know what? I've never liked that had to be said. It's like I don't like the fact that I have to talk to my son about the police, especially if he leaves, when he goes on to the lower 48. But when you get pulled over, you have to act a certain way different than your white friend. It's just the truth. Oh, yeah.
Man,
you know, I don't like that. And I don't like the fact that I've done that. And I don't like the same thing. I don't like to have to feel like if I walk down, not even walk down the street necessarily, I react to it in a way that makes me try to sound more proper, try to act a certain way. But I do, I do sometimes, absolutely, because it's just, I don't know if it's to get along to go along or if it's just trying to make everybody comfortable. I don't know, man, but I do know this. I do know it's real. It's there. And I think it's a mirror of kind of where we're at societally. Go ahead.
Yeah, true story. Like, this is Ernest again. I was in an Uber, and the Uber driver got pulled over, and the officer came and took her information. The first thing I did was put both my hands on the headrest in front of me, and after the officer walked away to run her information, she was like, you can leave if you want to just call another Uber or something to get back to your house, and I was like, lady, I'm not going anywhere until this officer says I can go. And that's just the reality of the life we live.
Yeah.
And he came back and she asked if I could leave. He said I could leave. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm leaving. But that's just how we live, man. That's how we have to train our children.
And
honestly.
Yeah. But gentlemen, let me stop you because I do not want to dive. I do not want to dive into that conversation today, because we could be here for the next 3 hours, and fair I'd like enough. to just quickly put a bow on it. Yes, it happens. It does. But there's good and bad and either, right? There's good and bad. I've had great experiences, a lot of them here, and with the police, and some stuff that when I ever got pulled over, I earned it. Okay, so they didn't do anything wrong. And on the flip side, I've had bad ones. But like I said, that's a conversation we can have. That's a whole other segment. So let's slide that one to the side.
I almost compared it to, it's like living in California. It's like earthquake drills. You know what I'm saying? It's not necessarily going to happen, but you need to know what to do when you're in this situation. Just to wrap it up.
Well said, Mr. Johnson. Well said, Mr. Johnson. And I love how even though I said we're going to wrap it up, his bravado and hubris told him, I got to make sure that we get this. Hey, no, you made a good point. It was a great one. And it kind of leads me into something I want to touch you guys before we run out of time to speak. There's a big buzzword that's going around these days that I wasn't even sure if it was legit until I started reading into it. The toxic masculinity. I don't know if either one of you have heard the term. I'm sure if you turn on the news at any point or opened up a magazine or a newspaper that you have. We're going to take a short break here, but when we get back, I definitely want to dive into that with you guys because I think this is one that's going to be really good for us. It's going to be educational. I had to educate myself just a little bit because, I'm a man. What's toxic about me being a man? So we'll be right back, Juno. Just hang out with us for a few minutes more. And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I am Michael, and here with Oren and Ernest, and we're going to dive right back into it. Toxic masculinity is what I brought, the buzzword that I brought up before we went to break. And I'm just going to lay out kind of a definition for you. Masculinity itself, from the Wikipedia, is a set of attributes, behaviors, and roles associated with boys and men. Toxic, or the concept of toxic masculinity, is being used in academic and media discussions of masculinity to kind of refer to certain norms or cultural norms that are associated with harm to society and to men, to males. I'm going to leave the first question, and I'm going to just toss this one up to either one of you guys. Now, before I say this, or before I go forward, I'd just like to put out there that masculinity in and of itself is not toxic. Right? There's nothing wrong with being a man. Right, I like it. I know my panelists here like it as well. It's traditional stereotypes of men being socially dominant, violent, and aggressive, however, have been normalized in our society. And as Black men, we are often encouraged to be a man. Suck it, sack it up, right? Suck it up. Not to show emotion. Don't be soft. And doing those things is like the ultimate insult. So how would you define masculinity? And is it different from how our culture and our media defines masculinity, or do you see your definition being parallel to theirs? Ernest, let me hear from you.
This is Ernest here. Let's just start off, like, everybody has heard the term multiple times in their lives. Boys will be boys, or locker room talk. And
yeah,
like certain things about that are just so harmful and just shouldn't be said or taught to the younger generations and whatnot. Like, boys can't cry. No, man. Sometimes you just need to have a good cry. And men don't cry, dope. Sometimes men need to have a good cry. And as far as, like, just boys will be boys and, like, treating women any which way, it ain't right. For first off, in my older ages, I've definitely be a lot more mindful of that stuff than I was when I was younger. Like, yeah, there's some things you could say to your friends, but like there's just lines that you shouldn't cross and don't need to cross. As Black men, we need to be more aware because, you know, there's situations out there where even when we don't mean no disrespect, it might get taken every which way. And it sucks. So
this is Oren talking. I agree with you 100%. When it comes to masculinity, when I first got asked this question, I had to really think about it. And so I went straight to the dictionary. Masculine, dominant, strong, assertive, innovative, independent, brave. Okay. Mm. So then the flip side of the coin would be femininity, right? Emotional, nurturing, collaborative, vulnerable, caring, humble. None of that has anything to do with gender. None. All right. Mm. And if you really look, if you say those words to yourself, being feminine almost comes off as like unsavory, like overly gentle. Why can't men be feminine? Why can't
I'll tell you what? Because when somebody breaking the house.
Hold on. This is what it is. Mm-hmm. Masculinity should not be dependent on gender. It should only be character or specific situations. Sometimes you have to
the terms that define masculinity, you're saying, it should not be specific to a gender.
It's terrible because when you attach your ideas to a certain thing and over again, it's almost like you lose sight of what the word even means. It's okay to be masculine in a situation that calls for it. As a manager, as a foreman, it's like there's going to be certain situations that you are going to need to dial up the caring, you know, or you're going to need to dial up the, you know, the assertiveness. What does that have to do with your anatomy? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, it's really, I feel like for me, it's really breaking down the term. It comes down to self-awareness, you know? It's like, you really have to be aware of what you're saying and how you're saying it. It doesn't attach to one single species. I feel like I'm a hybrid, bro. You know? It's like, you know my family. You know how it was. Not a lot of women can cook and clean better than me. What does that have to do with What does that have to do with being feminine? But to latch that to being like a black male, a black masculine male, to piggyback with that. So what does that mean necessarily? Does that mean that I have to be like the standout figure? Do I have to be over-characterized? Do I have to be extremely tall? Do I have to be really good at sports? Do I have to be...
You have to be aggressive.
Strong.
Super hyper-aggressive.
I'm probably extremely fast, you know? It's like, why do all these things have to be attached to that? I think it all comes down to the individual basis, you know? But there is a little bit of extra pressure added being black, because not only are you masculine, but you also have to, not only do you have to be assertive, but you have to be assertive in a cool way, you know? Not only do you have to be brave, but, you know, you need to be brave and overly dressed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Gotta be Mike Lowry and Bad Boys.
You know, so it's like, it adds to it, you know?
In today's society, there's certain stigmas put on within the black community about acceptance of, like, say, homosexuals or stuff like that. There's certain stigmas put on it.
Well, Ernest, what you're saying leads me back to what I originally was getting. And Oren, you did a great job of defining it. But Ernest, I don't know that I got it from you. Like, how would you define masculinity? Just take race out of it, just as males. We'll bring that back into it. But how would you define masculinity? And is it different from, like I said, is it different from our cultures? Or is it kind of the same?
Masculinity, it changed my whole perspective when Oren broke down like the definition, like basically saying that gender is not involved at all. But before it was, you got to be strong, you got to be tough, you got to just, this is just masculinity, not toxic masculinity, just masculinity, strong, tough, brave,
right, I understand.
And protect yours and know, like, you don't cry, like there's nothing to cry about.
Survive.
When it turns toxic is when you say a male can't have clinical depression and a male can't be sad or cry.
Yep.
Also, another thing that comes with, like, I'm bringing it back to black males, it's people make it sound like being depressed and sad is white people's stuff. No, it's absolutely not. It's absolutely not. I've heard that multiple times, and it's disgusting. Like a black man can't be depressed or sad or have all these types of feelings in their head, in their hearts, and it's harmful. It's harmful and sad that it's still like that. It's just like I said with the stigmas.
And that's good. That's good. Because I was just thinking about something as you were saying that's where, like you said, where it turns toxic is in, because the exact same thing that you both are speaking about, Oren, you with the definition and saying how it's non-gender, and Ernest, what you were just saying about how it can turn south because of people think that black males have to be as a result of it. I think whether you're black or white or brown or yellow or, you know, any color as a male, it becomes toxic because as a society, we expect men to act a certain way, which then holds them back from being and doing things they need to do for their own mental and emotional well-being. Okay. Always, especially in relationships. Could you imagine, and I'm sure anybody listening, any man listening out there can attest to something, having to control your emotions, right? You have an argument with your girl, but you're the one that's supposed to be able to stand there and take it and control yourself, while she is supposed to be the one that's going to wow all over the place, right? Just go say all these things and go all crazy, but you're supposed to just chill there and be, you know, a rock. I don't know a lot of guys that are actually like that. Okay. Yeah, always having to win arguments. Like, being a man means that we are more prone to anger and violence. I don't necessarily know if that's true all the time. There are women that are that way as well. We always have to protect. We always have to, like, these things are not necessarily bad in and of themselves, but when they come to a point where there's something we have to be in every situation and it negates what the opposite sex needs to do or can do, I mean, these can be terribly toxic for our relationships. And because I really also want to touch on the fact that I think toxic masculinity, I think this is really hit home for people, especially men, is when it comes to gift giving, right? Dinners and all these things. The social stigma is that men have to shower our women with gifts and pay for food and all this stuff. The reality in 2021 is that doesn't happen near as much as it does. And the bar is being for women who are making more than men and doing more than men. As that comes up, the social stigma of us having to do that, you know, we have to buy this, we have to be the guys that do the shower with them, whether they make more money than us or not, it could cause a problem in a relationship, I could imagine, right? And I know this for a fact, and some feeling emasculated when it's not necessary, right? But we feel that way as a result of stuff that's just kind of garbage. And Oren, you have a daughter. I have a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
I worry about pushing some of my garbage onto my son. Do you, right? Some of the things that I was brought up with, the guys don't cry and guys don't, right? Which is not healthy. But you regurgitate that because that's what you were taught. And unless you check yourself, you don't. Do you feel worried just doing the same thing where your daughter's concerned, or making her too girly because of how you would treat, or making her believe that, like, you're her first, right? You're going to be her first view of what a man should be. And how do you think that, like, being a father changes how you feel about the masculinity in general? Has it changed you, or has it just confirmed, or what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, I guess confirmed what you already knew to believe. And Ernest, I want Ernest to answer that one close, but Ernest, I want you to answer, although you don't have them yet, when you do got nieces and nephews who you have an influence on, and you may someday have them, how do you think that this would affect you, and have you even thought about that?
Ernest speaking. Michael, excellent question. So what I break it down to is change. I have, you are correct, I have a child. And as my child grows and she gets older, she changes. Mm-hmm. Just like adding from a child to an adult. Things change. You have to make an adjustment, just like in life. Like, I mean, I feel like some terms stay true to what they are, but things are always, always evolving. And when it comes to introducing any kind of masculine traits, feminine traits, it's always on a case-by-case basis, and it's always explained. You should never be ashamed of how you feel. You should never be ashamed of not knowing something. And things will get blurred, you know, because it's like it's something that you've learned, and then all of a sudden it becomes just the present. That's the standard. And then that's just how it is. But over time, you have to understand that things are going to change. There are going to be conversations that you are going to have, that you have to have an open mind, because whether you like it or not, there is something that you are going to learn. It doesn't matter who's speaking. There is something that you can learn, and you have to adapt that to your growth, because you would be a fool to think that this world is not changing. You'd be a fool to think that you're not changing. It is happening constantly. So when it comes to my approach with raising my 7-year-old daughter, I try and I hash things over. I do the research. I really think about what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it so she can really take heed.
Every time.
She doesn't need to look at me and say, oh,
wow.
Or if she goes to school one day and the teacher says, well, who does all the cooking and cleaning at your house? Who, who's the last person you cried? My dad. Who's the last person you seen cry? Who's the last person who painted your nails? It may seem like something that a woman would do has nothing to do with the approach of being masculine or feminine, you know?
Would it be different if you had a boy? Absolutely but let me ask you this. Do you think it'd be different if you had a boy?
If you want,
because I got a girl and a boy. Absolutely not. If you would like to lose your fingers, but I don't want you painting his nails. Absolutely not. If he decides he wants to do that, that's a conversation me, him, his mother, and Jesus can have. But I do believe that what you said about the nurturing, like everything you say about feminine traits and femininity, I feel towards my daughter. It's, of course, I'm nurturing that she can paint my nails, she can do all that stuff, and I proudly will do that. I got no problem with it. But my son, I feel the need to, it's like preparing him for what he is going to expect, what he's going to encounter as a male and a black male. So I find it hard to make that, because you got to toughen him up, right? He can't be the first time he gets, you know, no, you like, don't feel that way, you don't like think it'd be different if it was more. Okay.
No, it's well, like saying I got to teach you. No, Michael, it's like saying I need to make sure I stretch good penmanship in my daughter. I need to make sure she knows how to dress appropriately.
And my handwriting is impeccable, sir.
I can't teach her how to you know, initiate a rear naked choke, or I can't teach her how to change,
right.
You know, a carburetor.
Which is exactly what she needs to know how to do.
Why not both? Why does the term masculinity or femininity come in at all?
Go ahead, Ernest.
I got a question. Like, what if your son came to you tomorrow and was like, Michael, I want to paint my fingernails pink?
First of all, if he started off by saying, Michael, I want to paint my fingernails pink, I'd look at him dead in his face and I would tell him, boy, as long as
restriction.
Grounded. No. if he came to me and told me he wanted to paint his fingernails pink, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you and Juno, I would have a problem with it. I'm not going to sit up here and be fake. For the radio, you guys know who I am. You boys both know that's the answer you expected me to have, because that's the answer I would. I would have a problem with it if he wanted to paint his fingernails pink. However, I would have a problem with it if he wanted to paint his fingernails, period. The color would be irrelevant. The fact that, because if I'm going to let you paint your fingernails, I don't care what color they're going to be. It's the fact that why you painting your fingernails, because when we were coming up and before that, dudes did not paint their fingernails. And especially,
I have a light clear protection on right now.
Michael, okay, I'm sorry.
So you got pedicures and manicures. That's not the same thing. And look, I'm not. Is what I'm saying? Is it going to be? Some people are going to hear this and say it's ignorant. Sure. Some people are going to hear this and say he's being. You know, that's so old school. I am a product of my environment, and I am probably. My father would not have had that. My grandfather? Are you kidding me? Paint your fingernails. My grandfather used to, I had my ears pierced, and he used to call me out from the pulpit. Exactly, pastors, Juno. And he'd call me out from the pulpit and call me his daughter, my granddaughter, Michael, because I had my ears pierced. And you think that I'm raised this way. And he loved me and I love him, but that was just how he felt. And my father felt the same. And then my son wants to get his fingernails painted. It doesn't come that far down, man. I have to some growth, sure.
I
want to make him feel comfortable and let him know that I love him, but it'd be hard. That's all I can say. It'd be hard. Michael,
would you down the road be willing to accept something like that with proper education?
I would accept anything from my son that would not hurt him. I believe that I could accept anything that I don't believe would actually harm him or harm his soul. So
I love you, Mike.
That's what makes you a human.
I'm saying immediately, no. And that's why we're talking about this, guys. And I'm being honest with you, because I want to, and that's why I really want to get into this topic, because when it was first brought to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe this. I definitely think toxic masculinity is probably one of the strongest things that I felt, because when I started looking into it, I was like, wow. I was convicted. I was up here looking at myself and just putting the sort of garbage that I put on my kid. Because I turned to my daughter, and it's one thing, and it's my son, and it can be something else. And I look at him like, I owe this boy an apology. Like, you know, I owe for a lot of things, because it's just not, man, be you. My son is a great kid.
But that's the beauty in it.
He's a great kid.
because
I shouldn't put on him that he has to be this and has to be that. So yeah, you're right. You know, but we're going from recognition to change. It's a long road, man. But you got to be willing. It's just as long as. Yeah, you know, I don't, guys. It's tough for me. And Ernest, you know, it's good that you got to check and Oren here to check because you guys both know me and I know you guys, and to have you check me and be like, hey, but I really do want to put this really clear that there are going to be some people out there who are listening now who 100% agree with my initial statement about that, right? And they don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I'm not going to look at them and say, how are you going to raise your kid? How you feel? No. But there's a fine line where we say with toxic masculinity, when does masculinity become toxic masculinity? And finding that fine line, that's where the real challenge is. Because there's nothing wrong with being masculine. It's important. But when it becomes something that's harmful to us and harmful to our growth as a human being, that's when I believe it really becomes toxic.
Being able to not only draw that line in the sand, but recognize it, accept it, and then be able to make some changes. That's all it is. I feel like the biggest piece is what you did is you admitted it. You admitted it would bother you.
Because staring in the face.
And I think that's the start of change. That's the thing that I feel like as a whole we're all so resistant to. I've watched the documentary about the Jews. The difference is accepting that something terrible really, really happened. Well, you know, was it that bad? Was it this? It's like, yeah, it was that we have done something wrong, you know?
Yeah, gentlemen, isn't it? It's hard to say that we've done something. Yeah, like people to know that. That's where you find people that you can be around. It's when you realize you can find somebody that says, hey, I'm wrong and I want to do better. And from a genuine perspective, you know, it's definitely rare that you get it, and it's hard, and I can't fault anybody who's not there, and anything, and then but this in particular, it's just tough. Guys, I'm gonna leave it right there. It's been great talking to you. I really, 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 really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for coming on, Oren.
I love you guys.
Do it again, fellas.
Ernest.
That was a lot.
Absolutely,
of fun.
Yeah, gentlemen. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed speaking with you guys, man. And you guys really brought some insight and some different perspectives that I'm sure other people will be blessed by, and other people will be able to take with them after the show. So, hey, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Gino, for listening. And we will see you next week. KTOO. Have a nice day.